issue with. There are points of interest both in terms of London and in terms of Halacha Maisa. So let's just get some of these questions addressed. So we'll start off with a controversial statement of the Maharal of Prague. It's controversial a little bit unnecessarily. It's extremely controversial. But what I'd like to show is that there are Rishonim who say something similar, but they say in a less controversial way. So the Maharal of Prague happens to pick a very controversial way to express it, and that provokes a lot of discussion. But in terms of the Yesod that he's getting at, the Yesod is far less controversial than it has to be in the context that he puts it in. So the Maharal says as follows. The Maharal has a Sefer Gur Aryeh, most well-known Gur Aryeh and Chumash, but he has a Gur Aryeh on Shas as well. So the Gur Aryeh, I don't think it's available on HebrewBooks.org, unfortunately, the Gur Aryeh on Chumash is. But the Gur Aryeh on Shabbos, so he says the following. He talks about the Gemara that we discussed at some length, of Zomer Vitzarach Leitzim. So we spent some time recently talking about Tostus's Kiddush on top of that, so yeah, about the requirement of Vitzarach Leitzim. But even without getting to Tostus applies that even if you follow Rabbi Huda, that whole story we discussed. But without Tostus, the Gemara already says Vitzarach Leitzim. So it says the Maharal of Prague. Why should we care about Tzarach Leitzim? Why don't we just say, if you prune a tree, it's Zomer, that's it? Apparently, it's possible to prune a tree and not be in violation of Zomer. So why should that be? Tzarach Leitzim really focuses on the Kotzer part of the equation, right? So that's actually, I'm confusing things by bringing that in, but he focuses on the whole intent of talking about Zomer. He said it in a little bit of an unnecessarily confusing way. He says that with Zomer, in terms of the pruning of the tree, he says you need kavanah in order to be chayav both. You need kavanah for both, for Zomer and for Kotzer. He proves that from the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which seems to contradict this Gemara. I apologize for saying it a little bit of a confusing way just now.
So he's questioning kavanah
for Zomer, right? He's proves based on another Gemara really that you're not always going to be in violation of Zomer. You have to want to be Zomer.
If you're pruning your bushes, sometimes you might actually be
cutting
zoner.
It might not be zoner. If you're cutting off a branch off a tree, it's not automatically going to be zoner. So it says, so why is that the case? Why don't we say it's a ratio on the zoner? So he says, really, what seems like a radical chiddush, says that when it comes to zoreya, there's no such concept as secretion. Why? Because it takes a while for the effect to happen. It's not immediate. Right, the cutting doesn't necessarily do anything positive. The fact that cutting it enhances the plant. Right, so the enhancement of the plant, that comes later.
But the iser itself, but the action is cutting. Doesn't
correct, but the action is only significant as an action of Zariah.
So it's all of Zariah in general.
Oh, right, so then all of Zariah, he then extends it to that because he gives another example. Seems to be what he's saying. He phrases it in the way that's going to provoke the most controversy. The example he chooses is a controversial example. Then he goes on to say that since I'm so sure, there's no issue here. So he says, if I were to wash my hands over the grass, I wouldn't have a concern of psik ratio, because watering the grass, there's no psik ratio issue because the effect happens later. Now, some of you may be thinking about that quizzically because you know it's against the Ramah, it's against accepted halacha. So many of the Sfarim that talk about the Maharal get very worked up about that, understanding. You see many long footnotes pointing out that all the later poskim dispute that. So it happens to be that he really picked a controversial way and a controversial example for a Yesod that's not as controversial. But that is basically trying to say that if there is a delay between action A and action B, that doesn't seem to be subject to the rules of segregation. So if that was all he said, just this last sentence, it wouldn't be so controversial, and it might be that we actually follow that. But the examples he uses make it controversial, first of all, because this halacha of washing on top of the grass, as we mentioned, something the Rama says not to do, and has been accepted ever since then. So this is so in that particular example, certainly has accepted. But also, one could question whether using this principle to say Zoreya in general doesn't have Sikresha, somewhat of a questionable example. So we can come back to that question of why Zoreya may not be the best example of this is so. But the idea that some type of a delay changes the Psik Resha equation. So we find this perhaps in Rishonim as well. One of which I put in Armakomos, the other one I don't think I did. So one is the Ritva. The Ritva in Erevin, and Daf Peches, that's something the guys were looking at this morning. So the Ritva talks about a discussion in the Gemara there, which involves pouring water in a way that's going to cause other water to overflow into a Rosh Hashanah. And the Ritva writes that even if this is a psik ratio, even if this is something that's definitely going to happen, it doesn't mean it's necessarily usur, because he just says very succinctly that when dealing with kocho, we don't worry about psik ratio. Now that's a charged term. It's not 100% clear what he's getting at. Though, if you want to ask, okay.
Going back to the machlokria with the mitachinos and the rashash in terms of like zoreya.
So you're going to start to wonder why zoreya might be more complicated than necessary.
Yeah, no, but also just they were talking about specifically when you plant the seed, because you don't see that the seed anything happens. But with zomer, how do you decide what it does? Meaning maybe when you cut it, it does have some effect.
Well, it's hard to imagine that the tree doesn't. It's going to have to be some productive, real thing. So it's not going to immediately get bigger, get stronger. Ultimately, its path towards growing bigger is now. But it's not going to be completely simultaneous to the pruning.
It's not like planting a seed where you can see, like, you plant a seed and
correct.
The seed grows. Here you can't.
So that's part of why I think his example is a little bit overcomplicated. So let's first try to look at the Yesod and then plug it back into whether his example might be subject to a little bit more modification. Danny?
Why do we care if the benefit's not immediate?
Very good. So let's try to figure that out. Why do we care? That's what we want to try to know. So first, in order to try to figure that out, so we see that there are some Mishonim, perhaps, who are saying a similar Yesod. Do you?
I say, regard to the ritual, is it possible he's more being tole on the specific example than being koko and dividing it? You could read the fact that he's using it as trying to designate as koko, as dividing it, but this is just not a real action. Whereas opposed to, let's say, watering your hands over grass, you wouldn't say that's koko per se. It seemed like the ritual was just trying to categorize it as a koko versus
It's possible for the change. Part of why it's worth mentioning is because as much as the ritual doesn't have to agree with the Maharal, the ritual might still be the basis why the Maharal says what he says. Which again, goes back to the point that Maharal is more controversial than he has to be. It could be that there is a acceptable yesod, which doesn't go as far as he brings it. So a Rishon who also seems to be getting it, well, really later than a Rishon, but coming from earlier sources, if you look also in the Shulchan Giborim, on Daf Kofchaf, which I didn't put on, but he's explaining the Gemara about Grama. Gemara talks about the idea of grama possibly being permissible on Shabbos, and we discussed a little bit about how it's not clear whether it's permissible only min haTorah or permissible drabanan as well. So Shulchan Gibarim talks about the case there in the Gemara is that you have a fire, and you're afraid the fire is going to spread and burn down your house, chas v'shalom. So you want to stop that from happening. So you put containers of water around the fire. Containers that are going to be vulnerable to fire. So when the fire hits these containers, they crack, water comes out, extinguishes the fire. So if we were to say that that's mutter, again, without getting into the whole discussion, mutter the rice, mutter the rabbanan, the whole story, but if there is a hetter for that, why should that be? So Shulchan Gibarim explains, he says, really, that should be problematic. Really, this type of grama, this is really an issue. And it's really essentially a psik ratio. Why is it mutter? It's mutter really because you're not trying to do it. So if you were trying to do this, if you were trying to extinguish the fire, that would be a problem either way.
So it sounds like you're going to say, wait a minute, you are trying to extinguish the fire. So the way he understands it is that, no, you're not really trying to extinguish the fire. You're trying to contain the fire. So if you could contain the fire in a way that wouldn't extinguish the existing fire, it would not be successful. If you could keep the fire exactly where it is, and it wouldn't spread, you'd be fine with that. But you're trying to stop it from spreading, so through trying to stop it from spreading, you're also going to extinguish it. So the kibbutz is essentially a davar she'eino miskaven b'psik ratio. So essentially, he's combining the idea here that the Gemara is talking about a grava of the time delay. And what the Shulchan Gibarim is telling you is that essentially this is really a psik ratio of a davar she'eino miskaven. So what makes it different than a standard psik ratio then? Essentially, this is an example of a psik ratio which becomes okay. Why? Because of time delay. Because context. It doesn't happen immediately. So this yisod probably is accepted. And how it comes up in life may also help us to understand it.
Why can't you say it's the love of Hefzid?
So that's what we shall talk about, whether it's always Mutter or Gemara talks about a situation with the Dleika. So is a Dafk and a Dleika we're talking about a Hefzid Gadol or is it Mutter L'Chatzila? That's part of the whole debate that we're showing how to understand that Gemara. But it sounds like it could have been a Mitzvah D'Oraisa. Right? It sounds like it could have been a Psik Reisha of Malacha Kibbutz. And that would not be Mutter Makom Hefzid, presumably.
So, I'd say,
why don't
you say it's
we're
just containing the fire, so why do you have to
come
up to a time delay for?
Because you are doing kibbutz, right? And the kibbutz you're going to do is a
segregation.
That would be Asim D'Oraisa. Yeah, probably D'Oraisa. That's the majority view that a lot of D'Oraisa segregation is Asim in the third. I think it was Sammy Gilatavia. Sammy?
Are we assuming that Malachashim and Tzirchun Guf is the same thing? Because this would be a class of Malachashim and Tzirchun Guf. You're doing the kibbutz, but it's not for the kibbutz, it's to contain the fire. I don't care about the fire being on or off. I just want to not burn everything else.
Well, it really is the gufa.
If you have a side goal of... Right, it comes out to be essentially a Malachashim and Tzirchun Guf, so it should be Patim and Atar, perhaps.
That's also part of what he's kind of innovating.
I mean, is that what he's saying?
Right. That doesn't seem to be what he's focusing on, because the Gemara is Chiddush is Grama. Right? So he puts together Grama with Psik Reisha. Really, this is a case of Psik Reisha and a Daraisa. So what makes it different from any other Psik Reisha is the Grama, which essentially means that there's a time delay. Essentially means it's not happening right away. Okay. Gil up first. Okay, David. The base of Mikdash be built right here. Perfect place.
With regard to what we just were saying, we want to contain the fire.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't contain the fire extinguishing the fire that goes outside of the circle? So, granted,
right. So it comes out being a kibbutz, but the point
is, maybe it's not.
There's no practical way to do it without a kibbutz. But Eliyotzir, if you could keep the fire exactly as is, right, without it adding anything, so you would. Happens to be that the only way for you to do that would be to be mechaber the extra fire.
So
you want to say that there's no such concept. There's no such concept.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think it's much more of a psik ratio.
Oh, then I'm lost in Shrifal Goof, you're saying. Right, no, I hear that, right?
Why?
Because the mice is, it's an active kibbutz. Anyway.
That's what we said lost in Shrifal Goof was. Because if you had different methods of doing it and you chose one, so that's what Shrifal Goof was.
The only way you can do it is by doing kibbutz, and that makes it a malach.
So you're ready because the malach hasiluk to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, the whole purpose is to. The only way you're going to get this dead body out of your house is by taking it out of your house. You can't do it any other way. And therefore, because you can only do it that way, therefore it becomes a malach.
Right, it's true. I mean, in general, most kibbutz forms are ready malach.
Why do you think that's the only option for this containing fire?
So the fire is the causing you the problem.
You can remove, let's say, if it's on wood, you can remove all the surrounding wood, remove the fuel source.
It doesn't contain the fire.
Yeah, the problem is your issue is the fire. It's not like you're choosing among different things to expand your life. You have a problem, fire, which you're trying to be misalic. Because al there is room for Malach and Shrikh Lagu for discussion in terms of that, in terms of the Sila component.
The other question is, in any of these cases, you have like an action A and action B. Action A here is containing the fire. Action B is putting it out. It seems like the Gramma is, it doesn't seem like the time delay is the same distance, the same at the same location as, let's say, washing your hands over the grass. You're doing action A, and it's going into the ground, and then eventually...
I agree with you. I think that
it's much more of a Gramma and then a straight action A and B.
So you're saying, therefore, it's better or worse than Morales' case? Better than Morales' case.
You're saying it's a full-on psique ratio without any time delay. That is a psique ratio that's preluded by a full-on.
What's the full-on psique ratio?
You put the barrels out, but the actual malachos that are happening is happening right away. As the fire reaches the barrels,
right.
But then it's extinguishing.
But and that's, that can happen much later than your physical action.
Your physical action is the malacha A that we're talking about. The physical action that we're talking about for A is the action of containing it. And then a side point of containing it is the fact that the fire will go out.
So you contained it later when it hit the fire? You're
by putting the balance out, you're not really containing the fire. The fire is only being contained when
you're
the fire
defining containing as if it's a malacha that has a...
Yeah, I'm not defining containing.
Like it's a thud kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think you would need a mucker for that. You know, thud has this kind of a model that you set a trap... And then when it gets caught, maybe you're liable for the tzad then. But containing doesn't have a category.
It seems to be there's, just because it's ola in your machshava that you want to contain the fire, that's where
you're
doing the process.
No, it's not, you did a maisa. The maisa happened to be a maisa for heter. It doesn't have any, right now it doesn't have any malach involved. You're putting a barrel down on the floor. It's not any kind of malach at all. It's a normal maisa shel heter. Now, if it provoked a malacha right away, you know, that would be a normal psik ratio. But here, the malacha that happens to emerge from this is going to happen a half hour from now. It's going to happen whenever it gets there. So it seems like it does have the basic time delay factor. So now, being aware of those two positions, being aware of the Shulte Gibarim and of the Ritva, so that's helpful background as far as some of the discussion as to what the Maharal is getting at. So the Maharal's idea that if there is a time delay, there's no psik ratio. So there are many theories. Anybody want to throw out any theories, either based on the reset or based on something completely else?
So why would it be psik ratio?
Why it shouldn't be psik ratio, yes. When I say based on the reset a minute ago, you can use either the ritva or the shilta giborim, or you can use anything else. But you probably want to draw upon our whole initial discussion of why psik ratio is high in the first place. Sammy?
What can we say it creates one maisa, so your maisa is really kind of separated from the fact that the fire got there. You know, the fire caused this the kibbutz to happen in the case of putting the barrels down. But you know, so therefore, it might not be a classic situation where you're actually doing the maisa itself, which causes the muacha. Here, since you know you're doing something, you know, sort of to the side, which ends up grumbling with the time delay. So therefore, we see more of a separation between the maisa.
Okay, so one approach is to come from the maisa approach and to say that if there's a delay, it's harder to call it your maisa. So there is a lot to be said along those lines. And you can say that by itself, just anything is a delay, it's harder to connect it to something you're doing. You could say it based on, to look at the Ritvaza language, you could say it based on the whole kocho concept. That maybe there's already a level of indirectness once it's something you've set into motion to begin with. And maybe a psik ratio itself is always called kocho. Or psik ratio itself, even to the extent that we attach it as your maisa, it's not really your action, it's really your action in the category of kocho. You set it into motion. So you're liable for things you set into motion. So it's considered to be as much your maisa as a direct maisa, but really it's a different kind of your maisa. It's kocho.
So when we talk about grandma, the world likes to say kocho and koach kocho.
Oh, so then there's a different level of kocho. So that's Abba was correctly pointing out that there is also another madrega called koach kocho. So koach kocho may already be a disconnect. Especially, by the way, when it comes to the Hilchos Shabbos, when you require more of a direct connection to your action. So, for example, if you look at the Kadosh Baruch Hu of a Rav, Chajik Lavarav has fascinating tshuvas in general, but the third volume of his tshuvas has a different name. It's called Tziach Hasad. His tshuvas is called Tshuvas Eretz Tzvi. It comes in three volumes. The first two volumes are Tzvi. The third volume is called Tziach Hasada. So he has a whole essay in the Tziach Hasada entitled Psik Reisha B'Kocho, which, not surprisingly, ends up focusing a lot on his Maharal. And he essentially says that all Psik Reisha is really Kocho. So once it's happening at a time delay, then it becomes Koach Kocho, and that's already too far removed. So it's okay, Danny had his hand up. So. Yes?
Well, also not having a time delay. At least in Rich's case with the fire there is, but in the case of Maharal, there's no time delay.
Right. So after we go through all the theories, I want to try to then plug it back into the Maharal and see if his example needs more work. There are others. If you look also in the Tshuvas, Chazon Nachum, we've mentioned him in the past. He was Reb Nachum Wiedenfeld, the brother of the Dovev Meisharim. So he notes that in Hilchos Nezikin, there's a difference between we call Brahma, which is normally Pater, and Garmi, which is more direct. And the difference is, essentially, that whether it happens, even if you caused it, but does it happen right away, or does it happen after a while? So grama usually is defined by something happening after a while. So when it comes to Hilchos Shabbos, so there's some ambiguity about whether or not you are chayiv for grama, but we'll get more into this when we get into the malach of Zora. On the one hand, the Gemara in Shabbos here that seems to say you're not chayiv for grama, but there's a Gemara in Bava Kamma that sounds differently. We'll talk about how to reconcile that. But the Gemara in Bava Kamma invokes you need malachas machshavas. So here, if it's Eino miskaven, so you don't have malachas machshavas. So normally psik reisha can neutralize eino miskaven, but if it's a time delay, so then that makes it a grama. It's essentially basically the same thing the Shulta Kibarim was saying. He doesn't quote that, but he says it's essentially the same point. He just explains it in a little more length and a little more explicitly. He wants to use this to explain a machlokas the Rambam and the Raivid and Hilchos Shmita. His example is a little questionable, and I don't want to get into it in too much detail in the interest of time, but he talks about the Rambam seems to say that you can, in Hilchos Shmita, so there is a prohibition of fertilizing your soil. So what if you have an animal, you want to set up your animal in such a way so that the manure of the animal also fertilizes the soil? Are you allowed to set that up on purpose? So that's going to be, is that going to be okay because it's your animal doing it? So that's a machlokas, the Rambam and the Raivid. I think there are a lot of other elements there which kind of confuse the story, which is why I don't want to go into it in detail. But if you look in the Tshuvas Chazon Nachum, in the back, he has this Kuntras Mishmeres Lahabayis, where he talks about Shemitah and Yonim, and he gets into this whole Maharal, and he wants to use it to explain Rambam and Raivid about that situation of fertilizing your soil. So essentially there, he says, you find this difference between Grama and Garmi, that the definition of Grama means there is a time delay. So that's essentially what's going on here, just like the Shulta Gibarim says, that there's a Grama at play, and Grama could get you in trouble if you have intent, if you have Malachas Machshavas. But if you have neither intent nor grama, so then neither intent nor direct is grama. It's not immediate, and you have no intent. So the grama factor essentially neutralizes your psik reisha, so you're left with davar sheino miskaven. There are others. The Tshuvas Lev Avram has a tshuva about this, where he connects this to the Rashba. The Rashba that we saw about closing the house that has a deer in it, that Ron argued on. So we mentioned many, many different approaches as to what the Rashba was talking about. And, he assumed that there the Rashba was also saying this was going to happen under a delay. That since the deer only becomes eventually, ultimately he recognized that he's trapped, so then that's somewhat of a delay. It's hard to see how the Rashba is exactly saying that, but he understands it in that context.
We need the acknowledgement of the trapped animal.
So that it doesn't, you know, it can move until it tries to get out. So once it tries to get out, then it becomes trapped. I assume that's what he means. Otherwise, it's not obvious from the Rashba how there's really a time delay. Why is he not trapped right away? So presumably once it tries to escape, then it becomes trapped. I assume that's what he means. Otherwise, it's not very clear. Hi.
We talk about delay. Are we saying anything that's longer than instantaneous is considered delay?
Yeah, so that's what it seems like. Yeah, anything that's not... Now, that could also be a question of visibility. Right? If something is not visible because it's not instantaneous, so that could also be part of the explanation. It's not considered your maisa, but we can't see how A leads to B because B takes place sometime after A. When A and B happen together, so then it's perceived as your action. When it happens later, maybe not. Hi.
When it comes to killing animals, So do they have to be dead in order for you to be osur, like osur, like
for malach of ntilas neshama?
Yeah, like if you do a kosher shvita on them, but they're not dead, so does that?
Yeah, presumably that's called immediate. You know, that takes. You're saying the cases where theoretically you could have a.
You just cut the kana.
Right, and it doesn't actually die.
Yeah, so is that.
Right, but it has a hechsher shchita because of the chiddush of shchita.
Yeah,
right. So it's very. Since the malacha is called shochet, it's hard to say that's not.
Even though they're not going to die.
Right, it's hard to say that's not called. Like, that's the definition of the term. So there. Yes?
All this is assuming that it's a dumb machine we scabbing.
Correct.
So if it were a dover shemiskabin, so then we would consider this obsecration.
Right, absolutely. Or we would consider it usur, not necessarily obsecration. Dover shemiskabin might be usur in its own. So that's a range of possibilities that all go towards this maisa connection issue. You could also focus on a different element. Rav Nassen Gishtetner has a tshuva in his Laharus Nassen where he mentions a different possibility, which is very relevant to what we've spoken about in the past, that maybe it's just once you introduce a time factor, so you introduce a unpredictability factor. Maybe something will happen in between now and then. And that maybe it undermines the very concept of psychration. And so maybe that's really the issue. That maybe the whole nature of segregation is based on somewhat of a certitude it's going to happen. And once there's a time delay, who knows what could intervene, what could interfere.
Is he saying that we should take into effect like
Maisa Nisu? So then we're going to get to, I guess we'll go to this question now. So in terms of the Maharal's example, you need perhaps more of a miraculous intervention. Although not necessarily, I mean something can come and uproot it. But... other examples, you know, let's say, for example, the case with the barrels. So anything could happen in between now and then. The fire could stop on its own. Might
yeah,
be
the same meaning with all things considered, everything would work in the natural order of things.
But as soon as you expand the time factor, it becomes more questionable. So then your question about the natural order, so then it becomes relevant to ask what's a good example of the tesod and what's not. So the Maharal's example, to go back to that, to try to plug some of these theories into Maharal's example, so his example is maybe more controversial than it has to be, because, so first of all, one could say that if he's attacking Zoraya as a whole, so we already saw that Zoraya has its own unique structure where it's going to always involve a time delay, and yet, apparently, you're chayiv right away. Either the Menachas Tinus version, you're chayiv the whole shebang, or the Rashash's version, you're chayiv on contingency. But you're chayiv right away, that's already a prat in Zoraya. It could be that the toldos maybe aren't subject to this, so then maybe that's a little bit discussion. So maybe that's where you have a little bit of a room to be mechalik. Maybe Zomer is a tolda, maybe watering the grass is a tolda, maybe there is some room to distinguish. But also what really seems to be a significant expansion here is that it's really starting right away. Immediately it has its minuscule impact. The watering more than the pruning, because the watering you're right away nourishing the grass. Okay, it's not going to play out in any visible way for a while, but the process starts immediately. So as much as the yesod probably has a lot to be said for it, the Maharal's application of the Yesod is a surprising one, especially because the example that he gives comes into direct conflict with the Ramah, which again leads to a lot of very emphatic footnotes in later Sfarim saying, don't try this at home. This is definitely not within the range of accepted halacha. But the idea that there is some kind of time delay that may make a difference, and maybe that is utilized. If we have a few minutes, we'll also make reference there by Willig. Were any of you at his share, I think 2 weeks ago, talked about security systems? Right, so he talked about questions of security systems on Shabbos, which is one of the big Lamaisa applications of some of this. And we'll see if we have a few minutes to refer to some of what he said. But one of the things that he noted is that if you don't accept this yisod, so we have a big problem, for example, when it comes to heating systems in the house. If you walk into your house, you open the door to your house, so then you lower the temperature, letting the cold air in, and then ultimately, sometime later, the heat goes on, and that's presumably a daraisa of mavir. So it's the time delay that seems to save us. The belief that there is a heter of time delay probably makes a big difference. So the yisod probably is accepted, if not necessarily in the specific examples of the Maharal. But one could also say that part of the reason it's accepted in that case, in addition to the svaras that we've said now, is that also once you allow time to pass, so then it's very hard to tie it to any one causative action in some cases. Especially, let's say, in the example of the heat going on. So the heat goes on because of the accumulated effect of many different things that lower the temperature. So you're opening the door. It could have been significant, may not have been significant. Once it requires a lot of different things to happen and then ultimately it has a result, that may be a greater level of disconnect from your action than other things. And that may be even less chayiv than, let's say, the Shulti Giborim's case. That there, at least you're doing one thing which you hope will have a dramatic effect. These other cases where there's an accumulated effect over time, in addition to it just being that time passed, the fact of it passing in such a way also means that it is a big unknown as to what brought it about. Which may also actually help the Maharal's example come back into reasonableness. That maybe you could argue that any one drop that you put on the grass has a minuscule effect that may not even add up to anything of substance. And maybe there is, from that perspective, basis to maybe support what the Maharal was saying. Hi.
In terms of the Maharal conflicting with the Ramah,
yes.
Is that even really a question? Because they were contemporaries. So
right, but the same. But the point is, in terms of... No, you didn't necessarily see it. So but in terms of in terms of controversy surrounding it, that... Now, 400 years later, in terms of halacha l'maisa, it's hard for us to say that we can rely on this because halacha psuka has very much followed this path that all the halacha classes have been taught not to wash your hands on top of the grass. We're not really in a position now to undo that. That's essentially the issue. Hi.
How much does it change if you're washing your hands over your friend's grass?
So it gets into the whole whether that's nichole question or not. But figure out once you say call me your friend already. So as we saw, the somewhat debate what it means. Gemara says use the word chavre, but then the Rishonim discussed whether chavre really means chavre or not, or chavre should be translated as friend. So all the nichole questions get complicated in terms of how to read that Gemara. Probably doesn't change so much. What does change, I mean, we mentioned when we talked about Zareya that if you're washing on the concrete, that the concrete is gonna then pass off onto the grass. So again, that's a level of remove that probably makes a big difference. Okay, so that's one major topic which took up most of our time. Let's try to get in a few more. At least one major, very interesting application. So if you saw the Gemara in Pesachim Adaf Chafhei, that was on the Maran Makom, was Chafhei and Chavav. It's an exceedingly complicated Gemara. Which has two Okimtas trying to figure out whether it's talking about Reb Shimon or Reb Yehuda. But the Gemara talks about a situation which seems to be an example of a Davar Sheino Miskaven situation involving benefiting from Isuri Hana. Let's say Avodah Zarah. So the Gemara has a whole complicated discussion about Hana Habalo Bal Karcho. Maybe there's some type of passive Hana, smelling something, looking at something, and you are taking a path which brings you in contact with this Isser Hana. So it's going to happen because you're walking down this path. You're going to smell something, you're going to see something, you're going to hear something. So is that a problem? So the Gemara has a whole range of discussions whether or not you have an alternative. Can you walk some other way? Are you choosing to walk this way when you don't have to? Efshur or Efshur in that Gemara over there. And then the Gemara also has a question, Mechavein v'lo Mechavein. You're intending to benefit while you're walking past, or you're not intending? So it gets into a whole debate, Reb Shimon, Reb Yehuda. But what seems to come out from the Gemara is that if it's Efshur ve'eino Mechavein, it should be mutter. But if you're forced to go through this path, you don't have another alternative, and you're not intending to benefit, so then that should be okay. So, what about psik reisha? Is there a concern that, well, okay, you're not intending, and you don't really have another choice, but lamaisa, you're going to for sure get this benefit. You're going to for sure see or smell or hear the avodah zarah. So should we worry about psik reisha? So it's not clear from the Gemara. The Gemara doesn't bring it up. Rishonim do bring it up. And you find a variety of approaches. Tosfos seems to say that maybe it's not necessarily such a psik reisha kind of situation. Maybe the sound is not so loud. Maybe you won't hear it. Maybe the smell might not be so strong. The Rush, seemingly following in the steps of some of the Rishonim we've seen so far, the Rush sounds like he's saying that since you could theoretically cover your eyes or plug up your ears or plug up your nose, so that could get in the way of this happening, so therefore it's not a psik reisha. Sounds like from the Rush, like he's saying, let's say it'd be associated with Rashi and Zvachim, that not that you have to do that, but you can do that, so therefore that takes away the psik reisha possibility. There's a Chachmas Adam who sees this in a more extreme way and has been challenged for saying this. We'll discuss in a minute who challenges him. But the Chachmas Adam says that you have to do that. That if you want to do this, you have to make sure it's not a psik reisha, so you have to take all the efforts to walk in there blindfolded and ear plugged and nose plugged. And then, okay, if it happens to be that something breaks through all your perimeters and you get some hana, so then it's considered to be eino miskavein and not a psik reisha. That's considered to be, the later svarim consider that to be a very big chumra, and we'll discuss that more in a minute or two. The Ran in Chulin, we mentioned this Ran the other day in the context of Kilayim, when we talked about somebody who doesn't have kavana because he's afraid of the Aveira Shabbo. So he talked about shatnez in that context. So the Ran says that the concept of psik reisha doesn't apply to Isurei Hana. Why should that be? I'm going to think about that for a second. Why should it be that if the Isur is one of Hana, so then psik reisha doesn't apply? Sammy? Okay, so you can come at it from probably two directions. One direction is, as Sammy's saying, that maybe psik reisha only makes sense when you're doing some kind of action. And if there's no action here, it's a kind of a passive hana, so then that's already not hana, at least in terms of some of the later svarim clarify in terms of some of these passive hanas of seeing, hearing, smelling. That's one possible approach. You could also come at it from the other angle. You want to say the other angle also?
Since it's al karta, then there's no, you don't necessarily have kavana. It's something that
or you don't necessarily have hana. You mean kavana? You're perhaps you don't have. You're saying hana, and some do kind of attach the concepts of kavana hana, make them the same thing in this context. That's basically what you're saying. That maybe the definition of hana means that you are taking it in. If you're not choosing to take it in, maybe that's not called hana. So all of this, not all of these were shown, but this issue is invoked in a fascinating context that I put in the Maror Makomos in the Chafetz Chaim, Sefer Chafetz Chaim. Did anyone get a chance to see this? I'm pretty sure it was on the Maror Makomos list. Maybe it's on the addendum. But in any event, the Chafetz Chaim addresses this in a fascinating context. Chafetz Chaim says as follows. He is of the opinion, not everyone agrees, he's of the opinion that there's a prohibition of shmias lashon hara, hearing lashon hara. Why does not everyone agree to that? Because we all do agree, it's a quite explicit chazal, that there is a prohibition of kabbalas lashon hara. However, it's a fascinating discussion of itself. Kabbalah's Lashon Hara is probably not the same thing as hearing Lashon Hara. It's a whole debate, Chavetz Chaim elsewhere, and the Chazon Ish, and others, about what does it mean to be Mekabel Lashon Hara, because that does seem like somewhat of a passive act. And so what does somebody mean when he says, I'm not Mekabel? So that's a good question, worthy of a discussion at a different time. Maybe we'll have the opportunity to get to it. But the Chafetz Chaim assumes that separate from the prohibition of Kabbalah's Lashon Hara, there is a prohibition of Shmias Lashon Hara. That's not the same thing as Kabbalah, but it's prohibited anyway. He thinks for sure it's also Midrabanan, it's a Gemara in the beginning of Ksubis that talks about sticking your thumb in your ear if you hear people speaking Lashon Hara. So he understands that to mean for sure there's an Issur Drabanan, but he thinks there's also an Issur Daraisa involved. Separate Issur Daraisa, not to hear Lashon Hara. So working off of that, the Chafetz Chaim says, what do you do if you find yourself in a situation where people are speaking Lashon Hara around you, and for whatever reason, it's not shayach for you to leave, and it's not shayach for you to stick your thumbs in your ears? It's interesting, just parenthetically, sometimes people feel the Sefer Chafetz Chaim is living on a different level, living on a whole different madrega than the rest of us. That may or may not be true, but it's also interesting, especially in this context. You know, he does recognize that not everybody is ready to stick their thumbs in their ears when they're in public company, or that not everybody is necessarily ready to get up and leave. They don't always feel that's socially possible. So he acknowledges that that might be the case, that you may find yourself in a situation where you can neither leave nor plug up your ears. So then what do you do? What do you do about the shmias? Of course, he prefers you would leave or plug up your ears. But since that's not possible, so what are you going to do? So he says, okay, maybe it's not an isser if you follow three conditions. One condition is that you have to not believe it. That's Kabbalah's Lashon Hara. The third condition, we'll skip to the third for a second to preserve the second for a longer discussion. The third is that you shouldn't contribute to the conversation at all. You shouldn't even, let's say, nod in agreement, which will encourage and enhance the speakers of the Lashon Hara. So those are two conditions. You shouldn't turn it into Kabbalah, and you shouldn't partake in the conversation. But then here's the fascinating one. He says, also, you should make sure, control your attitude towards it so that it's not, what word does he use? You want to guess? It's not nichale. So he's using our terminology here. Make sure that it's not nichale. And in his footnotes in the Be'er Mayim Chaim, the lower section, so he goes into a lengthy discussion of this sugya of Hana HaBalo Bal Karcho, of this Gemara in Pesachim. And he goes through everything, and he discusses this issue of whether or not there's an issur of a psik reishi here, and how nichalei fits in. You want to comment on that?
I just wanted to ask, is it suggesting that the nichalei, you can say it's not going to be nichalei because you know it's an avera?
So here, in this case, you have to say that the avera is going to play a role in the non-nichalei, which is interesting if you want to try to extrapolate to other areas of halacha and ask a kasha, let's say, on a Mishnah Berurah based on this Chafetz Chaim. But here, presumably, what's bothering you is the Isser Shabbat. Because unfortunately, as we know, the human nature is not always inclined to be no lo nichale when it comes to Lashon Hara. So presumably, it's the spiritual transgression that's going to motivate your lo nichale. And he's telling you to be lo nichale, which means he's giving you spiritual instruction. Although maybe this room l'chalik between a ben adam l'chaver and a ben adam l'makom, that since we can identify with the motives of the isser independently, so maybe that is distinct. It's actually a fascinating avenue to explore. You could write a whole shtickle about this. But presumably, even if you would say lo nichale machmas isser elsewhere, isn't considered to be lo nichale, here, the Isser of Lashon Hara, which is relatable, it's actually a very interesting shtickle Torah if you want to go into it in more length. You could say that here you identify with the principles of the prohibition, and therefore you can make it lo nichale to you, even though you're motivated by the spiritual issue. So this provokes a lot of discussion. What exactly is going on here from every angle? The Chumra and the Chula Shabbat. Right, why? Yes?
Yeah, I was just
even Hanabala and Balkarpa, that's not super per se about it being Nichole too.
Correct. So that's the Gemara doesn't really bring up Nichole. That's where the whole discussion leading to integration. Right, so that's the whole same couple of levels of Chiddush. So it seems to be he's identifying Nichole with Hana and then Miskavim Hana, which is a couple of layers of Chiddush. There's an interesting discussion about this as a contemporary sefer called Chuvis Lichafetz Bachayim, not to be confused with Lichafetz Chayim, but to be a little bit confused because it's clearly drawing on the relationship. It's a sefer of Shilos and Chuvis, but coincidentally, every single tshuva in the sefer is about Hilchos Lashon Hara. So he talks about what happens, and it's a good yeshiva shiloh, so what happens if you're in the public restroom and you're trapped in there and you hear people speaking Lashon Hara? So what do you have to do? So he talks about this position also. And he gets into this whole question of Nichole, why the Chafetz Chaim assumes Nichole, where does he get it from? And he suggests that essentially there is a machlokas Rishonim. He has it as a machlokas, the Ritva and the Meiri, in the Gemara in Pesachim, about where Ichpasle would fit in. That when the Gemara says you're not machaving, that's taken as a given in the Gemara, that you're not machaving for the Yisra Hana. So what does that mean, you're not machaving? Does that mean that you're not machaving, you can take it or leave it? Or no, you have to assertively not be machaving. Where does Ichpasle fit into this? That as long as you are repulsed by it, even spiritually, that's enough. Or no, you can take it or leave it, that's also enough. So he understands that to be a machlokas harishonim. That the Meiri would say, lo echpesle is fine, that's also not considered to be machaveh. While the Ritva would take a more assertive stance, and he thinks the Chafetz Chaim understood it that way, that you have to actively make it lo nichole, so therefore, in order for it to fit into the Gemara's category of lo ichaveh, you have to make it lo nichole, you have to have that attitude in terms of what's going on here. There is a whole question here to what extent this really matches the discussion in the Gemara in Pesachim. Is this considered to be an Isra Hana? You know, the Ran says that the lack of Pesach Reisha here is that it's not applicable to Isra Hana, so is Kabbalah Slashon Hara an Isra Hana? Is that the right terminology? It's an open question. There are some who suggest the Sefer on Ksubis is called Imre Gedalia. It's written by Gedalia Finkel, who may be the, I think he may have been the brother of the of late Mira Shiva, that he has in his Sefer in Ksubis a whole discussion of Pesach Reisha Lo Nichole, and he talks about this Chafetz Chaim, and he suggests that it could also be relevant to the question of what the Isser Kabbalah Lashon Hara is, or what the Isser of Shmias Lashon Hara, which seems to have some correlation, that if the whole Isser is really mental, you know, it's really that it has an effect on your personality, that it has an effect on your soul, so then if you make it lo nichole, so then you can negate the whole Isser at its yisod. And maybe that's what the Chafetz Chaim is getting at. There is a beautiful sefer on Shmir Salashin and related topics, a very, very lumdish and beautiful sefer called Mishnas Yisrael. He has a very extensive discussion of this whole story. You could take a look. But it's also interesting that the Chafetz Chaim also says that he's working off the premise here that there's no maisa, like we saw in the context of, let's say, the Ran's principle, that if we understood it the way that Sammy suggested, there's no maisa, so that's why there's no Pesach Reisha. So he's assuming that there's no maisa here, because you found yourself in a crowd where people were speaking Lashon Hara. But what if you know there's a Lashon Hara society, and you like hanging out with them? You don't necessarily want to speak Lashon Hara, but you like hanging out with them. So you choose to go hang out with them, and it's essentially a situation where they're definitely going to speak Lashon Hara. So the Chafetz Chaim says he would consider that a Pesach Reisha. If you choose to go somewhere to a group of people where you know they're going to speak Lashon Hara, and then you're going to find yourself having to listen, so that he would call a Pesach Reisha, which he would think would be differently problematic. Hi.
Wouldn't that be a Darabanan?
But he thinks it's a Daraisa. He thinks that Shmiya Lashon Hara is a Daraisa. Others disagree, but he thinks it's a Daraisa. So it happens to be also, we've mentioned in the past, Rav Nissim Karelitz, his shiurim on Hilchos Shabbos, Chut Hashani. He also has a volume, I think it just came out, where he has a shiurim on Shmiras HaLashon. So he talks about this Chafetz Chaim, And he says also, so this idea, okay, the Chafetz Chaim says it's a psik reisha if you choose to go there. So maybe you could argue, though, is that really different than the Gemara in Pesachim, where you got up and walked to where the Avodah Zarah was? You walked to where the Yisr Hanah was, and we're not necessarily calling that a Maisa that connects to the psik reisha. So why should we call your choosing to go there? So he suggests that even though you don't want to hear the Lashon Hara, your desire to be a part of this group, that also goes into the equation. Since this group is speaking Lashon Hara and you did a Maisa to purposely connect to this group, so then he considers that all a part of Lashon Hara. You could reflect hashkafically what that says about the principle of Moshe Avleitzim or anything connected to that. But he understands that maybe that all goes into the equation of the Chafetz Chaim calling that a psik reisha. Okay, so that's a fascinating topic. Certainly recommend you look at the Chafetz Chaim. He has a whole in-depth discussion, analysis of the Gemara in Pesachim and the Be'er Chaim there on the bottom, and all of its ramifications. Definitely a fascinating area to extend this into. So we have about five more minutes. I'll just maybe throw in a few halachal ma'isa points and maybe one lamdusha question. At the following lamdusha question that I wanted to throw out for you to think about. What would you say if you have a iser, davar she'eino miskaven b'psik reisha, and psik reisha d'nichale? But the nichale is a nichale that is eino tzricha l'gufa. How does that affect the equation? I'll give you an example. Rabbi Willig discussed this in his shir. So the question comes up, we discussed recently, psik reisha by derabbanan. And so Trumas Hadeshen and others felt that psik reisha by derabbanan is less problematic, and others disagree. So some disagree based on the psak of the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says that if you close a box or you cover up, let's say, a beehive in a way that's going to trap the insects inside, so you have to do it in a way that's not psik reisha. And some of the poskim point out that this is true even though the animals involved are ein b'mino nitzo. They're not animals that are normally trapped, in which case the iser involved could be an iser d'rabbanan. So that seems to be a raya if the Shulchan Aruch still doesn't allow that. So then it sounds like that's a raya that by a d'rabbanan, so you have d'rabbanan apparently lo nichale, and it's still asur. So Rabbi Willig suggested that maybe that's davka case of psik reisha de nichale. Why is it psik reisha de nichale? Because you don't want the insects buzzing around. So it's interesting if you think about that, because if that's really your goal, you're trapping these insects so that they shouldn't bother you, it would seem that according to all definitions, what is that? It's tzad she'ein tzricha l'gufa. According to all definitions, because in the Mishkan, they trapped animals so that they could use them. And it's a negative purpose. You don't want the animal, you want the animal somewhere else. It seems according to all definitions, if you're trapping an animal so that the animal doesn't bother you, that's a malach she'eino tzricha l'gufa. So here, the nichale is a nichale of eino tzricha l'gufa. Hi? So it's an interesting question to think about, because it goes back to our original question, what's the role of nichale and eino nichale to begin with? And we saw that it probably correlates to what psik reisha is about. So psik reisha makes you chayev. So why does psik reisha make you chayev? So one approach is because it makes it as if you have kavan. So then we saw that maybe nichale is a part of that kavan. It only makes you have kavan if it's nichale, maybe assertively nichale, fine. But according to the other approach, that psik reisha makes it into one action. So where does nichale come in? I mentioned it's a little harder to explain. It comes in, presumably, because if it's lo nichale, then it's one action, it's a malacha now, but it's lo nichale, so it's a malacha shenitzricha l'gufa. So here, the nichale is coming from a component which itself makes it into a malach shemitzvicha legufa. So if nichale is normally valuable because it makes it, or badly valuable, it's normally problematic, because it makes it into a malacha hatzricha legufa, what would that say about a nichale, which is itself ain't a tzricha legufa? You follow the question? Right, that normally would say, what's the problem of a psik resha of the nichale? Maybe it makes it into a malacha hatzricha legufa. So if it's lo nichale, so then it's ain't a tzricha legufa. That seems to be the way you could understand why a psik resha of the lo nichale is at least not asur min haTorah, let's say. But if the nichale, which would make it into a tzricha legufa, actually makes it into a ainit tzricha legufa, because the malacha itself is ainit tzricha legufa, what kind of implications would that have? Just an interesting thought to think about. Just also throw in the next minute, so we can start Chazar afresh tomorrow. So just in terms of halacha l'maisa, you should be aware, there is also a strong trend of thought that when you're dealing with, let's say, drabanans and lo nichales, that makom mitzvah makes a big difference. So for example, there's a big discussion, we'll have it full on when we talk about mochek or kosev, but the library book question, when you have writing on the inside, on the papers, on the outsides of the pages of the book, so that, as library books do, they have words there, so you open it up, you're forming words. It's a whole discussion to what extent that's a real concern or not. But part of the issue is, okay, so it's a psik resha, presumably the lo nichale, you have no interest in making these words, composing these words, it doesn't help you in any way. So then that's a question of whether or not that's a problem. So many poskim, assuming you're talking about svarim, you want to use to learn, so many poskim invoke a makom mitzvah component, which also is thrown in a lot of these discussions. Rabbi Willig, in his discussion, talked about the security systems. It's a big issue. If you're going to make clicks or little red lights go on when you, or even video cameras, so is that an issue? He generally worked off the assumption that the surim involved the drabanans, at least according to Rov Poskim, and therefore it's a psik resha delo nichale by a drabanan for the most part. And because even though you want the security system to be there, but you don't want it to catch you, you want it to catch the ganav. So that you should set it off is of no value to you. So therefore, you're setting off the clicks. Ideally, you wouldn't. Ideally, you'll set up things up so that you don't have this issue. But if the situation is such that it's already set up, so he thought there was what to rely on from a psik resha delo nichale by a drabanan angle. So it's a much bigger problem when you provoke a light to go on. Say many people have systems outside their houses that lights go on. So he thought that was more problematic from two perspectives. One is that it's probably a deraisa that's involved because of the filaments, if that's the kind of light that's used.
Non-fluorescent?
Correct, a non-fluorescent light. That's A. And, sorry? Incandescent, right? And B is that he thinks that's nichale, that there should be light in the street. So that's a problem of nichale, so it's a double-edged issue. What mitigates the issue? So first of all, nowadays, as he pointed out, some lights are made out of gas, not made out of filaments, and that may knock it down to a drabanan. Other than that, he thought it was greatly problematic, and he suggested some creative strategies how to convince your neighbors not to do it. Feel free to listen to the tape, very unusual strategies. Besides that, he mentioned some other approaches as well that Rav Schechter assumes, based on the Rashba that we discussed, that there's no direct link to your action. Rav Asher Weiss has a similar but different approach. Maybe we'll talk about electricity more. We'll get into that in a little more detail. And he also mentions that it says in the Orcha Shabbos, I couldn't find this in the Orcha Shabbos, maybe somebody knows where it is exactly, that the Orcha Shabbos quotes a mysterious psak from Rabbi Yoshev that that's not called Malachas Machshavos. And how exactly that plays in is a mystery. But I'll try to find that inside and share that with you more. But those are some halacha l'maisa points. Hopefully we everyone followed today. That made sense more or less. Yes. Okay. So Baruch Hashem, tomorrow morning, first day of Chazara, we will start with the Geder of Malacha Shabbos.
What's the prejudice against the consumers?
Because officially there's no attendance record today, so I don't have any other basis to evaluate what the palace students have. So you look a little dismayed.
I just didn't understand.